team's goal. Of course, Big East championship.
I think we have a lot more length, and that's really one of our strengths.
No matter what we do, we always have to bring energy from the beginning.
Can't be just one person. It has to be the whole entire team.
Whatever happens, you gotta stay locked in, stay motivated, and do what you gotta do to be the player you wanna be.
Everyone loves to play basketball.
And with that, we are back on Full Court Press, the Georgetown Voices basketball podcast.
I'll take it. I like it.
I'm your host, Beth, and we have Errol here.
Hello.
And Jorge.
Hey, everybody.
Just the three of us today. We haven't spoken in about, 2 weeks. Both the men and the women had a pretty light schedule last week, but they have both played 3 games since we last talked, so we're just going to jump right in. The men, after beating Providence in a double overtime thriller, lost a nail-biter to Marquette and then lost a nail-biter to Creighton before pulling out a victory against St. John's just recently on Sunday. What do you guys see? Let's start with Marquette. What do you guys see in Marquette? Obviously, Marcus Howard goes down early on. Georgetown stays in it, has a chance to win on the last play. And James Akinjo blows his play call, does not pass the ball to an open Jesse Govan, instead tries to take it to the hole himself, and at that point gets blocked by one of the tall Hauser brothers. We lose the game.
That's Theo John
who blocked it.
Well, their Hausers were there. There was 3 of them.
That's true. They were all there.
Everyone just converged on him, and they were all taller than him. What do you guys see in that game? What are your takes?
I mean, Marquette is a very, very good team. You know, even without Marcus Howard, they still have Sam Hauser. They still have Joey Hauser. They still have Theo John. They still have scorers. And so, you know, I think the initial reaction when Marcus Howard went down was, oh, wow, this is going to be a lot lighter game than what everyone thought it ended up being. But no, Sam Hauser came to play. He finished, I think, with 33 that game. And so the loss really showed our youth of our team. James, I think, trying to relive some of the glory days from the Illinois game or even from the Providence game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it just shows the youth, but at the same time, it shows that he possesses that will, that I guess I'll call that, you know, the Mamba instinct, the killer, you know. He wants to score, he wants the highlight, but he also has to just learn how to be a team player, be one of our Jesuit principals, you know, the man for others. And so I think it's just important, you know, and I think that was a huge moment for him. I mean, and it was a learning moment because, you know, obviously he didn't start the next game. Mm-hmm. And we didn't win that game, and I'm jumping ahead, of course, but, you know, we didn't win that game, but I think it was a learning moment for him. He was able to see that I can't always be selfish. I can't always blow off coaches' play calls because ultimately I'm not going to be 100% blowing off coaches' play calls. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets paid the big bucks and I don't legally get paid anything. So it is what it is. I just think that there were still many bright spots in that game and we could see them, you know. Another huge defensive game from Jamarco Pickett. Caleb Johnson gave us good minutes off the bench.
12 points.
So I think all around it was a game that we were you know, you can definitely see the potential that's there, but it's just still such a young team.
Yeah, it was one of those games where it felt like a missed opportunity, mainly because Marcus Howard goes down before the under 16 timeout. He was in for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I don't know how I feel about that, because they actually forced him into 2 really tough layup attempts that weren't even close before he got hurt. It's they clearly had a game plan for Marcus Howard.
Yeah.
And they adjusted fine, but it's one of those where, yeah, if, you know, the best player in the conference goes down, that's something you got to take advantage of. And when they really have one offensive weapon that was scoring, and that was, which Hauser was it?
Sam
Hauser. You got to lock him down. And I remember Ewing coming in the press conference afterwards, and he was pissed. Because he very pretty much blatantly came out and told us, yeah, we had 2 guys open. James should pass that ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's passed it now. So
he has passed it now.
I definitely agree with the fact that they probably had a game plan for Marcus Howard and they had to change their game plan after that. If you just jump ahead to the St. John's game, James Akinjo and Jacob Mosley played great defense on Shamori Ponds. held them to 21, which, you know, 21 is still really good, but when you can kind of bring down such like an elite scorer in Shamori Ponds.
37
the first game.
Yeah.
That makes a huge difference. If James and Jagan had gotten the chance to play that defense on Marcus Howard, maybe he would have been taking bad shots, maybe he wouldn't have been connecting. A lot of what ifs.
And that's one thing, you know, I think that we've seen in the growth, especially from James and even Mac in some regards too. You know, earlier in the season, you know, you could almost venture to call them both a defensive liability.
Yeah.
Now they're growing into much more of a complete,
a
complete as a freshman can be, you know, as a freshman player. James is being tasked now with taking, you know, their star guard, whoever that is, and you're not really having to put someone like Mac or Jamarco on it. On them, and so I think, you know, it's really showing the growth and the trust that Coach Ewing has in James and also in Mac, because I think Mac has definitely been, you know, trending upwards as the season has progressed. You know, he said it himself in the interview after the St. John's game, he only has one ankle still,
yeah.
And he's still jumping out of the gym, and he still can shoot, you
24
know.
Points against Marquette.
He can shoot threes now.
He can shoot threes with confidence. Started the season one for like 17 or 18, and now he's shooting the season at a cool 30%. So, you know, not great, but he's definitely, when you look at from where he started to where he is now, you can definitely see his confidence shifting in his shot as well.
Yeah, and another thing in the Marquette game, Jesse Gouvans held to just 14 points. Marquette has bigs, but I think Jesse should have dominated more in the paint in that game. But, you know, he clearly bounced back after that in the other two games.
Just an off game.
Yeah, and when a player has 14 points and it's an off game, you know they're a very, very good basketball player.
I think it was 14-9.
14-9.
He still
almost
had a double-double.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And,
oh,
you know, yeah. It shows I think, too, it shows the game plan that teams are coming with for Jesse. You know, you look at, you know, the Providence game with Nate Watson. You look at the Creighton game with, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his last name.
Kremple? Is that how you say it? I don't know.
It's
Kremple.
Yeah. I don't know.
We're going to call him Martin.
Yes. him. And then even, you know, you look at the St. John's game when he was guarded by pretty much everyone who was on the floor ended up against Jesse at some point. So, you know, it shows that teams now are like, when you look at the film, Jesse's being sent a lot of double teams, you know.
Yeah.
He's being forced to put the ball on the floor more, and therefore it's like, you know, you've seen kind of some turnovers in the last couple games where he's done, like, tried to do a little too much dribbling and have gotten the ball poked away or, you know, done like a dumb travel or something like that. But I think programs are starting to try and figure out how to stop Jesse Govan, but he still arguably is the best big in the Big East.
Easily.
I think it's arguably. I mean, I think when you look at as a complete player, Jesse definitely has probably the best offensive skill set. But when you look defensively, he's not the best defensive big in the Big East. I don't think you can make the argument that he's the best player all around. He's definitely the most lethal offensive big in the Big East. And probably one of the most effective bigs in the country.
Yeah.
So I think teams are slowly starting to figure that out, but this is all, you know, what Jesse came back for. Jesse came back for a campaign like this. You know, his senior campaign, it's looking good. So,
I'd just like to point out, once upon a time, someone called him a finesse big.
Finesse big, so. Yes.
Well, speaking of Jesse Govan, he came back in the Creighton game with 22 points and 12 rebounds, so did get his double-double there. In that game, Georgetown struggled to defend beyond the arc. They gave up 13 threes in the game and ended up losing to Creighton by 4. It felt like a very bad loss at the time. Since then, Creighton hasn't lost, I believe. Creighton is all tied with Georgetown for third in the Big East, which we'll get to. But another frustrating close loss. Georgetown was able to get stops down the stretch, but just could not convert offensively, and ended up having to foul, and game ended as such. I was a little worried after this game personally that this was going to be the beginning of a spiral. What did you guys think after this game? What did you see from this game?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely popped into my head that it could spiral. I mean, for me, what I noticed was Tyshawn Alexander continued to get open from beyond the arc. He went 6-for-11 from 3. And when you have someone shooting that well in that game, to, in a 2-point game at the end, help off of him on defense and give him a wide open three for Creighton to take the lead, that was inexcusable. So to me, that was just a mistake mm-hmm. from whoever was on the floor. I forget who was guarding him, but I mean, that's what stood out for me. That is what stood out to me. And not much, actually, I say that everyone's like around 10 and 7 points, so actually offensive production was very balanced that game.
Yeah, I mean, I will say James Akinjo did not get the start after his late game antics against Marquette and showed back up with 11 assists, so that was impressive.
Season high, career high, actually, mm-hmm. sorry, for Akinjo. It does. You're definitely correct. But yeah, two words, Tyshawn Alexander. He's a very bad man. A very bad man.
His first name is hyphenated. Does that count as three words?
No, it's still one word.
It's still one word. Okay. But no, he's a very bad man. You know, I've watched Creighton games throughout the course of the season, and he's definitely probably one of the most improved players in the Big East. His catch and shoot ability is unreal. As well as his, you know, off the dribble. You know, there was like a little glimpse of hope for Georgetown when about 1:58 left on the clock, he ran off the court.
In the first half,
yes. Yeah, he ran off the court. He tweaked his ankle, ran straight to the locker room. And so a little tweak of hope for Georgetown.
We don't wish for injuries.
True, yes. But he came back out and started the half just fine and played probably every minute of the half. So I think that was definitely a game in which it was very easy to say, you know, oh, Georgetown season is over, because losing to a 1-4 team is never good. Mm-hmm. But I think when you look at some of the quotes from the post-game presser and, you know, kind of just how the players changed their attitude and kind of the attack that they came out with against the St. John's game, they weren't going to let that loss defeat them. You know, they definitely came out with, I think, more of a killer mindset against St. John's. Max smelled blood, and mm-hmm. he got 25 points worth of it. He shot 40% from three, 4 for 10. Jesse chipped in another 20. So I think those two alone giving you 45 points, and then Josh LeBlanc giving you another 15, like, that's really hard to outdo if you're the other team.
Oh, yeah. So on Sunday against St. John's, Georgetown wins 89-78. At times, they've really pulled away, especially in the second half, went on a nice run, set themselves up to a 10-point lead a few times. In Georgetown fashion, almost blew it in the end. We're up 4, Shamari Pond scored, then they almost turned the ball over but didn't, then Greg did turn the ball over, only up 2.
Terrible. And then the weird, like, 3 offensive rebound sequence in front of the hoop, too.
4 chances St. John's had to win or tie the game. Eventually, the ball gets poked out to Mac McClung flying down the floor, who hit a nice little dunk, two-handed slam to seal the game. Like Errol said, Mac had 25 in the game. He wasn't incredibly efficient, but he was hitting his shots. Jesse had 20. Josh LeBlanc had a 15. DeMarco Pickett had a pretty nice offensive game with 9 points, including going 2 of 3 from beyond the arc.
And both threes were very clutch.
Oh, yeah.
Like, definitely were took the air out of the St. John's sail.
Mm-hmm. James Akinjo had 8 points. He had 7 assists, too. Hit his free throws down the stretch, which was important. Overall, you know, aside from almost giving the game up at the end, they had a great game. They came back. They played well. They played together. They played good defense. They held Justin Simon to just 5 points. You know, this is the kind of game that Georgetown fans are looking to see. What do you guys see in this game? What do you think it means going forward?
I mean, you look at games like that. I toggle with myself when I make this statement, but I think I can say it with confidence. You know, James Akinjo is definitely the best point guard that Georgetown has seen in a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
And he's definitely the best passer.
Who else was there?
I mean, never mind. I think that James is definitely growing into kind of all the hype that came with him. You know, he's gotten out of some of his freshman jitters. And it's games like this that you look at and you see, you know, even if he's not having 15, 16, 17 points, you know, or getting to the free throw line as many times as he does, he's still making an impact on the game in some way. And, I mean, you can even see, you know, pretty much every game, you know, there's always a camera spot of James, like, asking Coach Ewing to go back in the game because he loves playing basketball. You know, he loves being out there. It's things like that, you know, that I think you really want in someone who could soon very well be the face of your program. This was a good turning point And I use that word very gingerly. But I think it's a good turning point for the Hoyas because they're able to, I think, ride this momentum into their next slate of games. And, you know, with a big game against Villanova coming up this weekend. Xavier at home on Thursday and then Villanova on the road on Sunday. These next two games are going to be very important and you're going to need all of your players at, you know, their best. And so this was definitely a good confidence booster to show, you know, we can beat a team that was ranked at one point in the season. We can beat a team that has arguably one of the top two players in the conference. I think that you can list off a bunch of accolades that come with beating St. John's. And each player played a role, you know, from Mac all the way down to Greg. Each player did something that impacted the game. And when you look at that, you know, that's the team effort that wins games.
Although I could do without that late game turnover from Greg.
Correct. Yes, yeah. We could all do without that late game turnover from Greg. But, you know, Greg also did play some good defense down the stretch. Greg also, he does tend to be a calming force.
He
spaces the floor because he is such a lethal shooter. Even though he hasn't been scoring as much lately, Greg is, you know, probably the most deadly shooter we have on our team if he gets hot. So it's definitely, like, when you look at him and even Javon Blair, when they both came in, it was, at one point, it was Javon Blair, Greg, Jesse, James, and Mac all on the floor. Everyone on that lineup can shoot threes.
And if you space the floor by putting Javon and Greg on the wings, then that leaves Jesse.
Jesse has so much room.
And if they double team him, Jesse knows how to pass now. Passes out of double teams.
He does not
all
pass
the time.
At little times.
How many assists is he averaging on the season? He's got a nice decent. 29 assists on the season.
That's not bad.
That's only one fewer than Mac now. Granted, Mac has played fewer games, but yeah, I'll take it.
That's not bad.
And his assist to turnover ratio is very good. Very, very good. You know, especially in Big East play. Go ahead.
So is James' assist turnover ratio. I think I saw a tweet. His assist turnover ratio is 2.5-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like he's
averaging seven.
He's picked it up.
Seven assists in Biggie's play, right? Yeah.
He's up there with Pons. As far as analysis from this game, I don't have much because you guys kind of said it all. But I mean, this kind of reminded me now of that weird stat we had sophomore year where if Rodney, LJ, and Jesse all had 20, Georgetown won.
Yeah.
I feel like it's becoming that with Jesse and Mac. And
then insert third person.
Insert third person, exactly.
Yeah.
If Jesse and Mac each have 20, Georgetown wins.
Yeah.
Someone else needs to have 10, and yeah.
Yeah.
No, I can see that. The other thing just about the Big East is it is just a crazy, it's craziness right now. If the Big East tournament was tomorrow, it would be a whole mess. So right now, Villanova and Marquette are atop the Big East, though they have
head
not,
and shoulders above the league.
Though they have not played yet. They have not played. Yes. I don't think Jorge's take will stop being safe the minute Marquette and Villanova play.
I still have Marquette by, like, I mean, I still have Villanova at least by 15 in that game.
I think they split that series, is my guess.
I can see a split.
But
my take is still safe.
However, Villanova's getting beat sometime soon. Maybe it'll
Fortune 500
be Georgetown. We'll see. So after those two, there's a three-way tie for third and a five-way tie for sixth. Ooh. Georgetown and Providence and Creighton are in a three-way tie for third at 3-4, and everybody else is 3-5, I believe, after that. Although everyone in the Big East is playing tomorrow except Georgetown and Xavier, who play Thursday. So, you know, every time you add a game, it just gets more mixed up. It's hard to say what this Big East is except for the fact that Villanova and Marquette are good. Villanova killed Seton Hall the other day, who people were saying was another, like, tournament contender. DePaul doesn't look like they're terrible. St. John's went on a tear but hasn't been winning at all recently. You know, Creighton and Providence started poorly but now are tied for third with Georgetown. Do you guys think this is going to keep going? Do you think it'll sort itself out? Do you think everyone's going to finish 9-9, like I said?
This is beautiful.
The stumped looks on their faces
is
wonderful.
I wish
you guys could see this listening.
This is one of those conferences where, like, imagine if this was the ACC where there's 16 teams and everyone's schedule is unbalanced. And you're like, oh, we had the same record, but our schedule is tougher. Yeah. No, the Big East, everybody plays each other twice.
Perfect.
It's even 10-team. It's beautiful and it's messy and I love it.
All 10 teams should make the tournament. That's my take.
Here are my thoughts on the Big East. I think that there are a lot of teams who have one or two star players, and I use the word star very liberally here. And then I think that there are other teams who have three or four star players. And I think Georgetown, depending on the night, can go back and forth. Because, you know, let's not forget all the things that Jamarcus Pickett did for us last year, and even the things that he's still doing for us this year. And, you know, you look at Javon Blair, went from being a sixth man to some people said he should have been a starter this year. I think, you know, when you look at the names that are on our team, even Trey Mourning with his, was it 28-point game that he had against Campbell this season.
Fighting camels.
You look at the talent that, you know, is in the Big East right now, and it's really wide open. It is really going to be, it's going to come down to that last game, which for everyone will be either March 1st or March 2nd. I know Georgetown's last game is March 2nd. They play through the...
March 9th.
Oh, yeah, sorry. The March 9th, because we go on the road for that. So, I think it's really going to come down to that last game to really set out the kind of the standings. Because
Georgetown has to play Marquette at Marquette in their last game of the season.
They do. And, you know, if they look like they did against St. John's, it's a very different type of game.
St. John's beat Marquette by 20.
Exactly.
People forget.
So, you know, it all comes down to how the team shows up that day and, like, what their mindset is going in. But I think the Big East is definitely wide open, and it's going to be very entertaining to watch.
I think Georgetown can just keep winning. Or my other theory is that if Georgetown, like, loses out, right, but everyone is, like, pretty close, they say it's hard to beat a good team or, like, a evenly matched team three times. So if Georgetown just loses to, like, everyone the rest of the season, then in the Big East tournament it'll be hard for those teams to beat them for a third time, and then Georgetown will just win the Big East championship.
So there are a lot of problems with that. There are a lot of problems with that, but we're going to move on to women's basketball.
So the women's basketball team kind of played an opposite way that the men did the last few games. They beat Villanova at home in a thrilling victory, 68-63. It came down to the wire. Brianna Jones missed some free throws, but then they were to stop the ball on the other
big
end.
Big rebound.
Georgetown comes away with a victory over a very good, very good Villanova team. And then goes on the road against St. John's and Seton Hall, which should have been a pretty easy trip. Neither team is that good. However,
well, Seton Hall is
decent. St. John's is
2-7.
And Georgetown dropped both games on the weekend. You know, the story remains the same with this team, that Dorothy Automaco and Deanna White is the soul of this team. Although Deanna did not have a great weekend. She had 9 points against St. John's and 13 points against Seton Hall. However, other people stepped up. So Brianna Jones had 14 points and led the team against St. John's. And, you know, she's been someone we've been talking about wanting to see more from, wanting to see more minutes from, wanting to see more shots from. And then Michaela Vinson had 18 on 7 of 11 shooting against Seton Hall. We can start with the Villanova game. What did you see in that game that was inspiring? I mean, not much production from anyone but Dorothy and Deanna, but 28 points from Dorothy and 25 points from Deanna. Is that the way this team wins this year? Those two going off? Is there a way to win that, like, doesn't involve those two having almost 30-point games?
Michaela having a 30-point game.
Yes. So
that's about it.
That's my question. Where is Michaela Vincent?
18 points against Seton Hall?
She did have 18 points against Seton Hall, but when you look at the two games before that, she was virtually non-existent. You know, she played, honestly, probably almost a career low at Georgetown. My guess would be 18 minutes against Villanova.
Oh my gosh, she was on timeout.
Two poor turnovers in, what, the first four minutes of the game.
When Nova went on that 8-0 run, yeah.
Nova started the ball away. Nova started the game on an 8-0 run.
She got sat down. She wasn't back on until after halftime.
Yeah. So, you know, you look at that, how she played in that game, and then you look at the same thing against St. John's. So it's, you know, she's in, like, a mid-season slump, it appears, and that's not good for a Georgetown team that needs to win. They need to win fast. Especially if they want to have any chance of, you know, getting either that first day bye for the Big East tournament, or just having any type of winning record to make the NIT. So, like, Michaela needs to snap out of her slump, or at least if she's not scoring, she needs to make an impact on the game some other way, because her numbers just aren't really there right now. But the Villanova game was, although we, you know, although the Hoyas won, it definitely was not a pretty win. And, you know, Beth, you said that earlier, you know, it was definitely not a pretty win. There were ample opportunities that Villanova had, I think, to win. They just couldn't score down the stretch. They started running what I would call an ISO ball with Mary Kadeka, who's arguably one of the best players in the Big East.
She's good.
Very, very good.
She's good.
Although Anita had some great stops on her.
Anita played some good defense on her. Defense. Regardless, Mary Kadeka still had how many points? She still had 16 points and, you know, 8 rebounds. Her, you know, her presence was felt just all over the court. And so down the stretch, Villanova resorted to kind of throwing the ball to her in the post and then just letting it kind of work itself out from there, which was not efficient. That definitely was a game that you can still look at, and like, although they won, they still have a lot of things to clean up, and it showed, you know, next weekend. Mm-hmm. Well, the following weekend when they played Seton Hall and St. John's.
Yeah, no, that game turned when Gadeka picked up her fourth foul and yep. got pulled. When, you know, there's a Villanova fan sitting a few feet to mine, and Errol was right at that game saying, "No, coach, leave her in." And honestly, probably should have left her in, because I think they were going on a run at that point. They won, but I mean, I'm just looking at the three games. I feel like the rotation needs to be adjusted, because you have a starter, Nikola Kovachkova, 12 minutes. Anita Kalava against Seton Hall playing 14, and you have Brianna Jones playing 30-plus off the bench. You may as well just start her at that point.
Nikki didn't start against Seton Hall.
Against Seton Hall, but in the other two she did.
Yeah,
which, and only played 5 minutes against Seton Hall, which is
very strange. Yeah.
I think he's still trying to figure out what his best starting lineup is. It's one thing preseason. I remember him saying, we have four that we think are in the starting lineup, and we can kind of adjust that fifth one based on matchups. And I think he's tried to do that.
Although it only feels like there's three.
It hasn't worked. It does only feel like there's three, but like it just hasn't worked the way he thought it would. And I think that's kind of the theme for the whole season.
Yeah. I mean, you and I, you know, Jorge, you and I talked about this at the Villanova game, but, you know, these last couple of games have been games in which a player like Brianna Mayfield would dominate, you know, and the question kind of becomes, you know, why didn't she see minutes? She did see minutes in the Seton Hall game, but, you know, she did play
well when she had minutes in the Seton Hall game too. That's they when did. They cut down that they cut down the lead.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, those are games in which, you know, you look at and you're like, Brianna Mayfield, 6'5". There's probably not another player besides Tori Schickel who's probably anywhere close to her height, Tori Schickel from Butler. When you look at the rotation and you see when you're going against teams that are deeper, or not even, when you look at the, we were watching the St. John's game and they only had 8 players dressed, and, you know, they still found a way to beat Georgetown convincingly. And so,
inside, Curtiana Breelove.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Big fundamental.
She really was.
She could do it all. It's one of those games. It's one of the points in the season where you kind of just have to look and just, you can see that Coach Howard, I think, is still trying to figure out his offense. Well, figure out his rotation, figure out his team, period. And unfortunately, it's too late. The Big East tournament will be here before you know it. And you can't, at least in my opinion, and you guys can feel free to disagree with me if I'm wrong, but you can't have 2 players carry the weight of 15, 14, 13, however many we have in our entire team.
Of course not.
And I think that when you look at Deanna and you look at Dorothy, they're both playing on average probably about 35, 36 plus minutes. And
I think it's more than that.
It probably is more than that. But, you know, they're at least playing that many minutes. And yeah, it's about that. They're both playing, you know, about 35 minutes. And the drop off from those two plus Michaela to the rest of the team is drastic. And so it's like, you know, trying to figure out a winning lineup, a scoring lineup. But the problem is the team can't score.
There's not a scoring lineup. I mean, you have I almost feel like any lineup that goes out on the floor, there's someone that defenses are going to sag off of because they're not going to be a scorer, especially if they're a wing around the perimeter and they're just going to leave them and double Deanna, Dorothy, double Michaela, make it hard inside to get easy layups and stuff like that. So that's one of the biggest problems for this team.
And you know, you look at it, you know, you look at big games from like this. Let's look at the St. John's game, for example. You know, Brianna Jones, 14 points, arguably her best game that she's played at Georgetown. That was actually her new career high, beating her previous high of 10 that she had once at Louisville and once here. I think it really shows that, you know, she can score. but where's that type of potential been all season? It's like, you know, I've been saying, and I'm still a huge proponent of putting her in the lineup, letting her get more minutes, but you have to produce when you're in those minutes. You have to make an impact, you know.
She went 0-7 from 3 against Seton Hall.
Oh, you know, 0-7 from 3 against Seton Hall, and you can't do that if you expect to want to have a, you know, spot in the starting lineup, or if you want to have a start on a winning team. So it's just one of the things where, you know, you have to kind of find that right lineup, find that right click. Like we said, time is running out. You know, there's only a handful of games left, and if you're going to try and make any run at the teams like the Marquettes, like the DePauls, who even were struggling, and now they're still good. Even the Butlers, who's sitting, you know, what, second in the Big East right now?
Tied for second, yeah.
Tied for second right now. I think kind of the same breath can be said that we said about the men's Big East. You know, we didn't really predict it to shape up like this. Obviously, you know, we predicted Marquette and DePaul to kind of be 1 and 2 for the women, and Villanova to be at the top for the men. But after that, you look at it, like, for the women, Villanova is struggling like we didn't think they would this year. Georgetown's struggling like we didn't think they would this year. And then Butler is succeeding.
So, right now, the way the women's works is so much, makes a lot more sense than the men's, except the Friday-Sunday thing, which sucks. But
Friday-Sunday's awful.
They wouldn't do it for the men.
Oh, of course not. However, everyone's put everyone at this point in the Big East.
Halfway through.
We're halfway through, and everyone's put everyone as opposed to in the men's where, you know, Georgetown's played teams twice and hasn't played three teams yet at all. Georgetown is 3rd to last, 3-6. I seem to remember last year they went 3-6 and then went 6-3 and finished 500.
They do it every year.
They do it every year.
So there is a sense that, like, they could pick it up and, you know, take a 6th seed or take a 5th seed into the Big East tournament, which they had last year. But yeah, Providence and Creighton this weekend. Last year, in that second stretch when they went 3-6, they had wins over DePaul and they had a win over Butler, and they had a close
game.
They beat Creighton. They had a close game against Villanova. It feels harder to see that this year. I think the loss of Cynthia Petke is just way bigger than I think any of us could have thought it would be. Do you guys think there's a potential for them to turn this around? How well do you think they can do? I mean, you know, Marquette is just top 10 in the nation, head and shoulders above everyone else. And that one, I know, will be correct at the end of the season. We'll see about Jorge's Villanova take. But after that, Seton Hall and Providence are 5-4, and Villanova and Creighton are 4-5. It's not as if it's impossible to pick it up. What do you guys think is going to happen?
It's not. I mean, we saw them hang with DePaul and Marquette on the same weekend, back to back. We know that they're, and that's true, Blockton comes back, so maybe you write off Marquette, but, like, we've seen them hang with the top teams in the conference. And like we said, they do this every year. They start conference play slow and then end up doing well. But the difference between this year's team and last year's team is, you know, last year's team had a 7-player rotation and was just kind of hoping to win a postseason game because it had been ages since they'd done that. This year's team, coming into the preseason, had tournament aspirations. Yeah. So, like, this is not enough for them. They almost have to run the table or win the Big East tournament to give themselves a shot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see it happening.
I mean, I see them making the WNIT if they can get their record above 500. I do not see them making the NCAA tournament.
I can see 9-9. I can see a first-round win, but I don't see them achieving that goal of making the NCAA tournament.
I don't know what I see. Here's what I see for this weekend. We play Providence and Creighton this weekend.
They need Creighton.
Need to win both.
They need to be up for Creighton.
They do. They need to beat both. Because Providence has, what's her name? Nokic.
Yeah.
Nokic. You know, she is
Yo-Yo Nokic.
She is a very good player.
And Creighton has Audrey
She's
Faber,
very good at basketball. And then you look at Creighton with Audrey Faber, Jalen Agnew. I believe they have a really good freshman out there, too, but I could be wrong. But Creighton, they gave us a beating earlier this year.
didn't break 40 points.
Did not break 40 points.
They need to be
Creighton
up for that game.
So that, you know, and it's going to suck because I think that's the Sunday game.
No, it's the Friday game.
Okay. So that's good. You know, they'll be rested. They'll be prepared. That's definitely a game that, you know, you have to bring your A game. I'll have a better assessment of the rest of their season after this weekend. I'll say that if they can split this weekend and they'll be 4-7, depending on how they look in the loss, there still might be a little hope to achieving a record of 10-8. If not, it's going
to
be 9-9.
But 10-8 doesn't get them to the NCAA
tournament. 10-8, you're right, does not get them to the NCAA tournament. But 10-8 might get you into the top 6. depending on how the rest of the Big East shapes out.
10-8 probably gets you to the top six, but if they split this weekend, I don't see it happening. I think if they split this weekend, I think they need to win them both for confidence, because they go to Marquette and DePaul after the weekend after.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the next weekend?
And you don't want to go into that, like, having a 1-1 week where it's kind of iffy and you're not completely sure about it, where well, you're going to have to put out.
I'm going to just stop you right here. Alizé Blockton is back. It doesn't matter. She is the best player besides her teammate, Natisha Heidemann, in the Big East.
Yeah, but you still got to go to DePaul.
Yeah, okay, Kelly Campbell, Marte Grace. It's fine. That's going to be a weekend that you have to be awake for both times. But, you know, Jorge, I think you are right. You know, they do need to win both games this weekend to have any type of confidence. In reality, they lost to Marquette and DePaul by, what, less than 10 points combined, I think?
No.
How many?
It ended up being 15.
15.
But, like, they were at one point in the game.
At points, it was very close. That's right.
With, like, a minute left. Like, Marquette, it was free throws down the stretch from Heidemann. DePaul, it was free throws down the stretch from Kelly Campbell, whoever else it was. Maybe Grace. I forget who hit him.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, I think these next two weekends are going to be really important for the Hoyas. Definitely yeah, really important.
They'll know the weekend after.
And then
they're gone for the weekend after. Weekends.
So, yeah. they need to snag... Yeah, out of these, like, five games in these next couple weekends, they need to take at least three.
Or all of them.
Or all of them would be great. But they need to take at least three. Definitely, you know, finding a rotation that works, Coach Howard. You're on the clock.
That makes it sound like he's drafting a team.
Well, he has to draft a winning starting lineup. Something.
Well, the other thing about this team, just really quickly, is that they were, like, the beginning of the year, they were playing incredible defense, and Seton Hall just got every shot open all the time, and... You know, you're left wondering, where is this defense coming from? Our team's figuring out how to play around Georgetown, or...
Shadeem Samuels, very good at basketball.
Oh, very good at basketball.
Second week in a row, player of the week.
She's a transfer, right?
Is she a transfer?
One of them transferred. They were talking about some transfer on the team that was good.
Victoria Cardacy's the transfer. She's transferred from Clemson. Yeah.
She's ACC transfer.
She's very, very good at basketball.
Why else do we know about her?
I don't know how else we know about her.
I remember being in our Women's Big East preview.
She's the girlfriend.
She's the girlfriend of former Hoya guard Trey Dickerson. That's how we know about her.
That's how we know about her.
I forgot that was her.
Yes. Yeah. She's very good at basketball.
She's very good.
Very good at basketball.
Well, so for the first time, at least personally for me, there's more of a sense of hope.
For the men.
The men. And maybe that's just because, you know, there's a more recent win. You know, if they had lost to Villanova and lost to St. John's but beaten Seton Hall, maybe we'd be looking at it differently.
They're not putting in, like, a, like, bad offensive performance, though. Like, we don't see a men's game and say, oh, they looked bad.
Yeah, that's true.
We looked at the women's game this weekend and said...
that play was bad, but we never...
They looked bad.
The men haven't been blown out at all. They haven't been completely out of the game in a very long time.
I don't know if I'd agree with that, but go ahead.
I personally think that at this point the men have to go 4-7 to be above 500, I think.
Which is,
I think, far more doable than... It feels like more doable than the women going 6-3.
4-7 in this crapshoot of a Big East?
Yeah.
And with every game being close, even if you...
They're going to go 7-4.
That's a take. They go 5-6.
I think that there have been games that Georgetown has looked bad in. The men. Speaking on the men, I think there have been games that they've looked bad in. I think you look at the Xavier game.
But they didn't look bad the whole game.
That's true. I didn't see that game.
I'm not saying that they looked bad the entire game, but they looked bad the majority of that game.
That's fair.
I think you look at, even if you want to honestly focus on parts of the St. John's game in the beginning, it was a bad game. You know, it was bad defense, bad turnovers.
Which St. John's game?
The first St. John's game. Okay. The first one. I think that there were definitely times where it was, you're just like, this is not what you're capable of. But I think they just make up for it with Govan's dominance. They make up for it with clutch block from Jamarco Pickett or things like that. They do things that kind of make you forget about them. But there have been games where they have looked bad and they've just gotten, I don't use the word lucky enough because I think that they're all very capable basketball players. But they've just, you know, kind of savaged their way to a win. Instead of being in control from start to finish, like I would say they were with the most recent St. John's game. In control from tip to buzzer, including Josh LeBlanc's walk-off dunk.
Except those, like, 2 minutes.
That's fine. Everyone falls asleep
right
for 2 minutes.
Right before the end.
It's fine.
So this team does. You just got to hope those 2 minutes don't kill them.
True. If not, Coach Ewing will.
With that, we're going to close this up.
I just want to say a quick shout out to former Hoyas, well, transfer Isaac Copeland. He tore his ACL over the weekend in a game against Wisconsin, I believe. So prayers up to Isaac. You know, get well. Definitely. We miss you. You had a good time here. Hope all is well.
Rooting for him.
Yeah.
The Hoya, the men.
The men.
Take on Xavier and Villanova this weekend. The women take on Creighton and Providence. We'll probably be back after that to talk some more. Not cry. All right.
Tears of joy.
Well,
make sure you follow
to be determined
on Twitter at GU Voice Sports. See you guys.
Bye.
Teams go, of course, Big East Championship.
I think we have a lot more length, and that's really one of our strengths.
No matter what we do, we always have to bring energy from the beginning.
Can't be just one person. It has to be the whole entire team.
Whatever happens, you gotta stay locked in, stay motivated, and do what you gotta do to be the player you wanna be.